All of us who are now adults were teenagers once. Some of us remember those years fondly. Some of us wonder what happened to us in our teen years. A group of university researchers from the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Oregon recommended recently putting more time and attention and money into research into adolescence. For one thing, they do become adults. For another thing, there are some countries with lots and lots of teens at this point in history. The researcher from the University of Oregon is Nick Allen. He is the director of clinical training there. He's the director of the Center for Digital Mental Health and the leader of ADAPT, the Adolescent Development and Pathology Team. And he's our guest in this month's edition of Curious, Research Meets Radio. Nick Allen, thanks for joining us. Nick Allen, are you there? All right, we seem to have lost the connection. We're going to get him reestablished on his cell phone, and we can get into more about what he's been talking about. There is a posting that Nick Allen was one of four authors of in the November 14th issue of Nature. And the article was called Importance of Investing in Adolescence from a Developmental Science Perspective. And so what it's really about is taking a look at what we know about teens now and the new tools that we have for research, everything from fMRIs to better diagnostic capabilities, and getting a better idea of what it is that goes on in the heads of adolescents so we can figure out how things work. Nick Allen is on the line now. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello.
Hi, good to have you here. So I'm really intrigued by the very idea of the Center for Digital Mental Health, where you're the director. What is that about?
Well, it's a research center at the University of Oregon, and what we're interested in is how we can use digital technology to enhance people's mental health. That may strike people as an almost counterintuitive idea because, of course, there's a lot of concern at the moment about how digital technology might be harming people's mental health, particularly in terms of people feeling addicted to their devices or experiencing things like cyberbullying. But and they are concerns for us at our center too, but we're also interested in how we can use digital technology in new ways that might actually be helpful to people's mental health.
Is the greater concern with the use of digital devices among teens for adolescents?
Well, yes, it's true that adolescents use their devices in quite a different way than older people do, and particularly they use them very much for social communication and communicating about very intimate and important issues in their life. So, for example, someone my age, I'm in my mid-50s, I primarily use my phone to find information, to send short messages to my wife about why I'm running late, I find out the football scores, the weather. But my daughter, who is 17, she uses her device in a very different way. She uses it to communicate with her friends, often about some of the most intimate and important aspects of their relationships. So, you know, young people are using their devices for very much for social connection and social communication. And of course, therein lies both the possibilities for using it in a positive way, but also some of the dangers.
So teens are the focus of so much attention and certainly attention of marketing in our country, but are you saying they are understudied by science?
Yes, they are understudied by science. In fact, we have, in many ways, adolescence is a kind of forgotten decade for scientific study. We have a lot of research that focuses on adults, and we also have a lot of research that focuses on children younger than 10, and there's good reasons for that. That's a very important phase of life. But the second decade of life associated with the teenage years is really one of the most important phases in the entire lifespan. We see that most of the really serious mental health problems that people might experience throughout their life typically first occur during that second decade of life. So depression, schizophrenia, substance use, eating disorders, a lot of these problems emerge during that phase of life. And as well as that, there's a lot of other health issues that are very much affected by the adolescent years. So even though you don't get heart disease or you don't get cancer typically during that stage of life, many of the behavioral or lifestyle factors that might contribute to increasing your risk for those things are being established during the teenage years. So, you know, we really see teenage years as a very critical time of life for life, not just for health, not just during that phase of life, but for right across the lifespan.
Nick Allen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a psychology professor at the University of Oregon, the director of clinical training there, the director of the Center for Digital Mental Health, and the leader of ADAPT, the Adolescent Development and Pathology Team. He's our guest in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio, and we're talking about studying teens. Your thoughts are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So Nick, are we talking about this as something like a second round of childhood? I mean, we always talk about the importance of a good start in the first few years of life. Are you saying that 10-plus need to get the same kind of attention?
Absolutely. In fact, there's been a lot of attention, and very appropriately so, on the first 1,000 days of life. So the first 3 years, roughly, of life is a very critical stage for setting people up for healthy life or an unhealthy life. But everything that we're discovering about adolescence, and particularly the early adolescent years around puberty, suggests that this is a second time of life when there's an enormous amount of change happening in the brain and the body, in people's emotions and their social relationships and their relationships with their family. And so this is a second time of opportunity. It's not only a time of risk, but it's also a time of opportunity to set into place healthy habits and healthy behaviours that are really going to stand people in good stead. So we really would say that you need to invest both in that early phase of life, but also in this second phase when so many things are being determined.
We know what happens to the body in puberty. We start to grow things we didn't used to have, and other things mm-hmm. get bigger, all that sort of thing. Is the same sort of stuff happening to the brain, just even in simple growth rate?
Absolutely. So the brain is going through really enormous changes during this period of life. And we, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it is the greatest changes that you see in the brain across the lifespan, with the exception of early infant years. And yes, and the puberty hormones, so the hormones like testosterone and estrogen, which are really rising in the body so dramatically and are responsible for these sex characteristics that we see that you were just referring to, they're also having a very profound effect on the way the brain is organized. And it's changing the way the brain functions. It's changing the shape and the structure of the brain. And it's really getting the whole human person ready for this phase of learning how to enter into the world of adulthood. And that's what's so important about adolescence, is that you're going from this point of dependence on the family. And over that next 10 years, you have to find yourself somehow prepared to move into independence and to move into taking on adult roles and responsibilities. And so the brain is likewise getting ready for learning about that kind of more complicated adult world that the person is going to have to negotiate from their 20s on through the rest of their life.
But it sounds like even without any environmental or phase of life or sociological characteristics, that the brain is still somewhat wobbly at this point in life.
It is, and that's part of the design, if you like, is that the brain is ready to learn new things. And one of the things that we think is very important about the adolescent years is the need to learn through experimentation. And so this is, of course, something that parents are often not that comfortable with, because they would prefer their kids be safe and secure. But in fact, in a very important aspect of adolescence is this period of experimenting. And of course, this can come out in lots of ways. It can come out with experimenting with your identity, trying out new things, maybe testing the limits, having a weird haircut or wearing clothes that your parents think are a bit crazy, or listening to music that your parents don't like. This is all part of what adolescents really are wired to do, is to explore and to learn through their exploration. And part of that actually means being able to take risks and make mistakes. And that's something that parents often find quite scary. I have three children myself, and I know from first-hand experience how difficult it is to see kids go through this, and how you have to occasionally just let them go and explore and make their own way in the world, and including making their own mistakes and learning from them.
We have a guest here to talk to. Here's Vajra in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Nick Allen from the University of Oregon. We're talking about research into teens. Hi, Vajra.
Hi, good morning. And Mr. Allen, or Dr. Allen, or whichever it is, I'm sorry. I'd like to know how your research is impacting or how you are addressing gender dysphoria in children and teens who are now being funneled into prepubescent children giving puberty blockers and then teenagers being given cross-sex hormones. So how would you address that with the research that you are doing?
All right, thanks for the question, Vajra.
Thanks, Rosa. That's a great question. And I should probably say right from the get-go that this is not a specific area of my expertise or my interest. I certainly have a general knowledge about this issue, but it's not something I've done particular research into. And I'm sure you could get a guest on the program who knew a lot more specifically about it. But I guess, you know, the thing I would say more generally is that these teenage years are the years when people are developing a sense of personal identity. And one very important part of that is understanding your own sexuality. And that is something that's emerging. So that we see this is often a period where kids will become aware of their sexual preferences in terms of whether they're LGBT kids or straight. And it will also be a very important period for people's gender identity. And so often it's during these years that people might become aware that they have, as you say, gender dysphoria, that they don't feel comfortable with the gender that they were assigned at birth. And so I think that, you know, my general point is that I think that I would see this as part of the development that's going on during that stage. And, of course, it's a very much an individual case-by-case decision as to what's the best way to manage that. And often that's best conducted by the family and the individual themselves in consultation with their doctors, because there's a lot of nuances and very specific individual factors that need to be taken into account.
I want to acknowledge your co-authors on the report in Nature from November, Ronald Dahl, Linda Wilbrecht, and Anna Balanoff-Suleiman from the University of California, Berkeley. One of the things that spurred me to look at that research was the incredible rates at which some countries have teens in the world. I mean, I looked at the median age in African countries in particular. I mean, some of them have a median age of around 15 or so. Ours never got below 28. So there's a lot of teens in the world.
Absolutely. In fact, the estimates are that there's well over a billion teenagers in the world. But as you point out, importantly, 90% of them actually live in lower or middle income countries. And so, you know, this just shows you the enormous global significance of adolescence. And in particular, there are some issues that confront teens in those countries that are quite different than the ones that confront teens in the USA. For example, you know, in many of those countries, it's very difficult, especially for girls, to obtain secondary education. You know, some of those countries might still have laws allowing child marriage, or even in countries where they might have laws against child marriage, customary law allows it, and so the national laws may be ignored. And so there's a lot of very specific examples. And just in terms of getting back to the points about digital technology, of course, in these lower and middle income countries, many of which are in sub-Saharan Africa, they don't have the kind of access to the internet that we have in the higher income countries like the US and Canada and Australia, where I'm originally from. But it's coming. And so one of the things that we can think about in those countries is what are the best ways to introduce digital technology to young people, perhaps in a more scaffolded way than we've been able to do here in the US, because here the availability of that technology is kind of come in so fast and furious that often families and lawmakers and so forth are sort of trying to catch up with what's been happening in the technology sector. So I think that you know, we have an opportunity in these other countries to think more carefully about what's the most healthy form of use, and how do we frame laws and legislation and help families, support families to encourage that use.
Digital devices aside, Nick Allen, what is the biggest dark zone? Where do you think the greatest need for research is into teen development and needs?
Well, I think that one thing that I would point to is that what we really need to do is very detailed studies on prevention, because the teenage years are a very important set of years for preventing the onset of serious mental health and also physical health problems. And what we really need to understand is how can we intervene with teens to understand how to support their mental health, to support their well-being, and to support the development of lifelong positive lifestyle habits, which are the ones that are not only going to prevent them from having, mental health problems, but also, you know, the major physical health problems like cancer and heart disease down the track. Now, if we could actually find ways to support teens and invest in teens that actually prevented these problems, the savings to our healthcare system would just be enormous. And so, you know, I see that the opportunity for prevention during the teenage years is really one of the great opportunities that we're not grasping at the moment. And we need to do some serious research on what kinds of programs are most effective, and especially when can you deliver them so that they have their biggest impact.
Well, we have about a minute left here, but and then a big question, though, about given the fact that there's plenty of research that indicates that teens know the risks of some of their behaviors and yet do it anyway, I mean, how mm-hmm. effective do you think prevention programs can be?
Well, I think that's the exact point, is that the prevention programs have to understand teenage development well. One of the things we know is that teenagers often, in situations where they're making, if you like, cold decisions where they can reflect on something and think about it over time, they often make decisions that are just as good as adults. But when they're making hot decisions, as we call them, that is, decisions that have a lot of emotional or social impact, then, and they're made in the heat of the moment, then we often find that teens do make decisions that are more impulsive and less informed by their knowledge than do adults. And so understanding the different kinds of decisions that teens are making and the different role that social and emotional experiences play in those decisions is one part of designing really wise interventions that are going to be effective.
All right. A lot of work still left to be done. Nick Allen was one of four authors of a report in Nature in November about importance of investing in adolescence from a developmental science perspective. His colleagues from the University of California, Berkeley, Ronald Dahl, Linda Wilbrecht, and Anna Bolanoff-Suleiman. Nick Allen is the director of clinical training at the University of Oregon, the director of the Center for Digital Mental Health, and the leader of ADAPT, the Adolescent Development and Pathology Team. Nick Allen, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.